All right. Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Vegan Activist Radio. We are here live on UMFM 101.5. Very happy to be here today. My name is Cheryl Sobey, and I'm the host and producer of Vegan Activist Radio. Really hope that you enjoyed the show last week, where I interviewed Winnipeg-based animal rights activist Debbie Wall. Super awesome to have her on. She's such a great person and activist for the animals. So today I'm very, very excited for today's show because I have a very special guest joining me, Rob McNeil. So Rob is an animal rights activist living in London, Ontario, and he's an activist with several animal rights groups, including the Save Movement, Anonymous for the Voiceless, DXE, and most recently, he's interested in building pressure campaigns that focus on amplifying the voice of the animal rights movement, as well as building alliances with other social justice movements. So Rob's a very dedicated animal rights activist. I had the pleasure to meet him over the phone earlier this summer, and I'm really happy that he's joining me here today so we can chat more about his work and what's happening in the animal rights and animal liberation movement in Canada. Welcome, Rob. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity and for all the activism that you do.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Yeah, I was so happy that you agreed to be on the show because I know we only talked once, but I really, yeah, respect and support your work. So this is great to have you here.
Thanks.
To start, do you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I didn't like the part where you said I was very special. That doesn't sound like me at all. I'm just... I moved over from New Zealand over 20 years ago. I just came for 3 months of work, and like Gilligan, I'm still here. I've traveled a fair bit, over 40 countries, backpacked across the Middle East, but all through the carnivorous, cis male, white privilege that I enjoyed at the time before I became an activist. I play a little bit of guitar. I like changing the lyrics to popular songs to annoy animal agriculture. And that's pretty much me in a heartbeat. I've learned a lot over the last few years of activism, and I look forward to learning more.
That's awesome. Thank you. And so now I always like to ask my guests, because my show is about veganism and activism, so what is it, when did you first become vegan, and what was it that made you go vegan?
Sure. So January 2017 was when I went adopted a plant-based diet and shed my leather and wool and other things quickly afterwards. In 2016, my vegan daughter, Sarah, stayed for a summer with me, and she worked at the company where I work, and she showed me how easy plant-based cooking is. And around the same time, I had a chance to visit a local farm sanctuary and got to meet some of the survivors of the animal agriculture industry. And there really wasn't any turning back after that. Once I'd fulfilled my share of piggy belly rubs and cow hugs, I just couldn't, you know, even dream of eating animals or using animals anymore.
Yeah, wow, that's a pretty powerful story. But I think that's super important that sanctuaries do exist for that reason. And I wonder, you know, how many other people out there have gone vegan, you know, from meeting those individuals. So thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
So now maybe let's talk a bit about, activism, animal rights activism. You're an animal rights activist. So what forms of activism do you currently engage in right now?
Yeah, well, I certainly, after I went vegan, I went activist fairly quickly. In the spring of 2017, the Save Movement had an open house locally, and I got to meet some wonderful local activists, and I just became suddenly aware of how much slaughter there is going on everywhere, including in London, and how most people are just completely unaware of it like I was. So like a lot of people, I wanted to make up for my past eating and animal using habits and spread the word about activism and speciesism. My current focus is the Stop Maple Leaf Violence campaign on Instagram and Facebook that we'll be talking about, I guess, but also I'm active with the Save Movement. I support local leaders, local vigils, and do some touring or meeting online for research or education when I can. I still have a ridiculous full-time job, but and I haven't found a way to shed that yet, but there's still plenty of time for activism. Some of the things that I'm also involved with, last year I was lucky enough to tour the Midwest USA with a couple of other fellow activists. That was the Live, Love-Based Intentional Vegan Experience Tour. We roamed through 8 states in a car and just supporting and helping create local activist groups. We got to visit some of the U.S.'s largest slaughterhouses. We went out as far west as Dodge City, Kansas, where 20% of the town work in cattle slaughterhouses that boast about hosting 1,000 cattle trucks every day, and the hills are just covered with feedlots full of beautiful cows. So that was one tour that I got to go on. It was a real experience. Overall, I think to grow our movement and change the world, we've got to work with allies. Mm-hmm. It's hard sometimes because, you know, we want to be pure, we want to just work with other plant-based people, but all other social justice groups have done that in the past, and I think we need to do it as well. So I'll go out for climate strikes, support Indigenous protests. Basically, I'll do anything that disrupts the current systems that we have.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. That sounds like a really powerful tour and experience that you went on.
Yeah, it was fun. It was kind of, it was grassroots. We just called up, I looked at a map, and we just called up a bunch of different towns and said, how can we support your activism? What kind of groups do you have there? What would you like? So in a couple of places, we did talks, like organized events, or we would just go out and support cubes or vigils. We managed to create a few groups or help create a few groups on the way. And it was also gave me the idea for another little project, sleeper project that I've got, which is called Activism BNB.
Okay.
We stayed with activists wherever we could, and that bonding experience really led to a lot of great discussions and a lot of great outcomes. And so got a kind of a sleeper project to build a map of places where activists could stay as they tour around. And it also encouraged me to open my own home to activists. I've had a lot of activists come to London and stay over, either passing through or not. We even took in an activist pig for a while. Piggly Wiggly was brought over from a sanctuary, so we even had an activist pig staying for about a month. He had a little litter box and a roasting pan, which I don't think he ever really grasped the irony of.
Yeah.
And we put him in a little harness and took him out for outreach. And Aww. lots of good stuff came out of the tour.
Yeah, that sounds really like a powerful experience. Yeah, that's part of the reason why I like doing my radio show, too, because connecting with other activists and talking to people is just, yeah, that's how we build the movement and, you know, develop more creative ideas of how we can take action. So that's really awesome.
Sure. It was kind of, it was ironic because as we were doing the tour through the U.S., the council here in London was secretly rezoning the property for the Maple Leaf Slaughterhouse and kept it quiet for another year after that. So it was ironic that we thought, you know, we were doing this great thing touring around, and it was great. We made a lot of good friends and connections that have borne a lot of fruit since, but you know, you don't necessarily have to travel too far to do activism. There's lots going on at home.
Yeah, definitely, especially here in Canada. I shouldn't say just Canada, because I think every country in the world is guilty of participating in, you know, the destructive animal agriculture, but it seems like here in Canada we have some of the largest slaughterhouses.
It's not a competition, I guess.
No.
We certainly didn't have anything to teach the Americans about killing animals. All of the McNuggets in Canada are made right in London, Ontario, and that little cargo plant is, you know, 20% of the size of the one that they're proposing to build now for Maple Leaf Foods.
Wow.
So killing is everywhere.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I guess that would be a good opportunity for us to talk maybe a little bit about the Stop Maple Leaf campaign. So that's a campaign that you founded, co-founded. I don't know how you like to.
It was a team effort.
It really founded itself.
Maple Leaf Foods shocked our local AR community when they announced this proposed mega chicken slaughterhouse that's supposed to open 2 years from now. As I said, it had been rezoned secretly by council 2 years earlier. I think they were just starstruck by the idea of these jobs, even though these aren't jobs that Canadians are going to want. When it was announced in November 2018, that really we just didn't have any choice but to fight it. There's so many things wrong with this proposal. You know, they're paving over one of the most important Indigenous archaeological sites in Ontario. They've displaced and are displacing endangered species. They're building it on an environmentally sensitive wetland. They're planning to pump up to 8 million liters of sewage into our Thames River every day.
Wow.
And above all of that, they're planning to kill 150 million baby chickens every year. It's an insane proposal, and one that, I don't think Londoners just couldn't even imagine something as bad as this, and they're still waking up to it. So the campaign really just called out to us to do something.
Yeah, well, thank you for, taking action on this. And so what is the response from other members of, say, not the vegan or animal rights community about this campaign and their reactions to the slaughterhouse? Like you said, do they realize the damage that it's going to cause in their community?
I mean, I think we're helping them try to realize it. Obviously, there are a lot of jobs that are going to come to London. And when you just look at it from a distance, you'd say, hey, there's over 1,000 jobs coming to London. We need to embrace this. But, having seen a lot of slaughterhouse and a lot of slaughterhouse towns, these aren't jobs that people are going to want. The environmental pressures are ridiculous out of a plant like this. They use so much fresh water and cause so much waste. And so response is mixed. We've done a lot of outreach. And, when people find out about the subsidies that were given to this billion-dollar company and the environmental damage, when, our local council has just declared a climate emergency, people are pretty supportive of it. As of now, none of these jobs, exist. So it's not like we're asking anybody to lose their job. We're just trying to say, look, you just rethink this idea. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's a lot of work, but I'm really glad that you folks are there and trying to work on this. And I really hope that the local community continues to, rally around this. Because like you said earlier, connections, coalitions, working with other movements is really, one of the only ways that we're going to achieve overall, environmental justice, animal justice, all those things. So.
Yeah, I agree. And it's Maple Leaf Foods is a huge company. They're publicly traded, which means they're pretty open with their information. And, in addition to that, there's one billionaire that owns 40% of it, Michael mm-hmm. McCain, of the McCain French Fries Empire. So there's a real figurehead there to focus on. And we're certainly focused on the system, not on any individuals. But the McCain family is interesting. There's a really strong web of connections between the government and the McCains. Mm. Even Canada's finance minister is married to a McCain. So, we're kind of scratching our heads that somehow there is no money to provide water treatment to local Indigenous communities. But this company, this billion-dollar company, got $50 billion to do it. My phone has a low battery. That's really annoying.
Oh,
can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
I might have to call you back in. It would last a little longer than this. Would it be okay if I just called you right back?
Yeah. How about, we'll maybe play a couple ads and maybe a song, and then you just call me back, and we'll reconnect in a moment.
Okay. Sounds
all right.
Great.
Thanks, everyone. All right. So Rob unfortunately had a phone issue, but don't fear. We are going to play perhaps a song. I've really today been listening to Negretto by Propagandhi, so I think I would like to play that song for everyone because it is one of my all-time favorite songs, and I got the pleasure of hearing it at the Propagandhi show last week. So for those folks who were there, what an amazing night and what an amazing song. So we're going to hear Negretto, and then we will be back with Rob in a moment. Thanks, everyone. You're listening to Vegan Activist Radio on 101.5 FM.
Our lives lead to nowhere. We're counting time that grasp before each other. From the ashes, your final flight with a plunge into the shadows and this night. Suffocate the squeezing hands of fate. Our lives can't be replaced.
something more. Quiet aching, weeping. We're all just faces and nothing more. So take the ashes out, head it out. Have you ever seen someone wasting away? First by choice, then after it's too late, they decide that they want to come back to life. But they're drowning in a sea so endless. You see them come up for air, then go under forever. The squeezing hands of fate.
All right, welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Vegan Activist Radio on UMFM 101.5. Joining me is guest animal rights activist from London, Ontario, Rob McNeil. Those who are just tuning in, Rob had a little bit of phone issues, but he's called back, and I'm very happy to keep chatting. So thanks, Rob.
Oh, thanks for having me back. It's technical difficulties. I guess I didn't pay the bill or something, but you here know, we are again.
It happens.
Be good now.
It happens. Yeah. You know, this is actually my first time in this studio doing a call-in interview, and I've hung up on you twice now. So thank you for calling back.
It's all good.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, anytime we can talk about animal rights is awesome. So I'm very glad that you're here. So we were talking about the Stop Maple Leaf campaign, the McCain family. So is there anything else you want to say about that folks should be aware of?
Yeah, just that, you know, it's a corporate pressure campaign. These pressure campaigns were originally developed by the unions to get what they wanted, but they've developed into, you know, anti-corporate campaigns. There are other ones out there, such as the Canada Goose campaign that's happening in Toronto right now. There are other examples as well, but they're basically designed to apply pressure to the decision makers. And, you know, our goal is to encourage Maple Leaf Foods to accelerate their investments in plant protein, of which they've done a lot. But even by their own admission, they still think 80, 90% of their business will be killing animals going forward. And we want to help them realize that there's no future in that. They need to get out faster. And in the process, they're a great target to raise awareness of speciesism and of animal use. So we've had a lot of fun so far. We disrupted their annual shareholders meeting. We got to hold the floor for over 10 minutes and ask some fun questions of investors. We hang out at Michael McCain's downtown Toronto mansion and do love-based outreach in his neighborhood. We have a big cardboard cutout of him that is out when we interview him because Michael doesn't want to come outside.
Yeah.
It's all very love-based. We had a five-day hunger strike and camped out at the Toronto slaughterhouse, stopping every truck that came through for 5 days. And we also have a program to decommodify violence in grocery stores. So, for example, you know, you're just doing your shopping, you go in, maybe you take some flowers from the front of the store or a sympathy card and take a photo of it with their product in the freezers. You can put it back afterwards. We're not, you know, encouraging anybody to damage product.
Yeah.
Just to take photos and put them online to denormalize the fact that this is violence, not food. So it's good fun.
Yeah, I've seen some of your photos that you've taken in the grocery stores. It's quite powerful.
Thank you.
And also, I saw the video of when you disrupted their shareholder meeting. So, bravo.
It was good fun. It was all very polite and Canadian.
Yeah,
they asked me how long I needed, and you know, I said I can talk about chickens all day, and we came to a compromise where they eventually asked me to leave. But it's all very love based, and you know, and the other thing to know is that Maple Leaf Foods is Canada wide and has offices around the world as well.
Yeah.
So as you know, obviously Manitoba has a huge pig slaughterhouse near Brandon, and Manitoba Animal Save bears witness there, including I think that you've got a vigil coming up in a week or so, October 7th.
Yeah, we'll be out there next week.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, being in solidarity with the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually called this vigil, which I was going to talk to you about, but we called it Stop Maple Leaf Violence, because I think it's important that people know that we're going there. We are bearing witness, and that is our number one goal, to be there for the animals, but it's also about showing the violence that these companies are responsible for these against these baby animals, and the public is paying for it. And they're paying to make these people billionaires. So,
totally, yeah. When is enough? You know, like when you're a billionaire, and they've literally invested hundreds of millions of dollars in plant protein factories, but they still plan to kill animals as well. So, yeah, any opportunity we get to tie in the products, as they're called, to the lives of individual animals, I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, thank you for all the work that you're doing. I mean, that five-day vigil that you folks did, was it in August?
Yeah, I lasted about 4.5, so I didn't quite make the whole 5 days. But
was it a hunger strike as well?
It was a hunger strike, so just water. Just water and nothing else. So it was a powerful experience, and interesting being out there stopping trucks in the middle of the night. But,
wow. So the trucks. Yeah. In Toronto, they're coming all hours of the day.
Yeah, they actually tend to avoid the high traffic times, so they do come throughout the night. And we have a good, as good a relationship as you can have with a slaughterhouse, where the trucks always stop safely, and we get a chance to bear witness to the lives of the chickens. And that plant is one of the ones that's being closed for this new mega slaughterhouse coming to London, or proposed to be coming to London.
So have they started construction on it yet?
They're scraping the earth. They're digging holes.
Okay.
They haven't. Nothing started rising out of the ground yet, but they're certainly doing earthworks. So yeah, we'll just keep bringing attention to it and keeping a close eye on the construction.
Yeah, because ultimately the goal would be to have that not open, or instead turn into a plant-based protein kind of
definitely. They've,
factory.
They're wanting to put a plant protein factory in Indiana, in the States, and. You know, our dream would be to have those two switched, or at least for this one not to be built at all. It's really short-sighted. This is so like 1970s and 1980s, thinking that people are going to be wanting massive amounts of chicken, because this plant is being built to last, you know, 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the future, and we want them to do the right thing by their investors and the chickens especially, and reconsider.
Yeah. Exactly. I know, it's amazing how much power these corporations seem to have, especially in conjunction, you know, with the government. Because I know here locally in Manitoba, the government that we have in power now, they put forward some bills that went through that basically lifted a previous moratorium on building new factory farms, specifically pig factory farms in Manitoba. And that was lifted by one government, you know, and they had the ability to do this. And now all across Manitoba, there's all these new factory farms popping up in all these different communities. That's basically, we're not even hearing about all of them because it's all done so behind the scenes. So it's just really horrific that corporations, I think, and have this power over the government to be able to do
totally,
these things.
Totally. Yeah, I think we can tell from the numbers that there are going to be hundreds of new chicken farms to support the increase in volume you're looking at. And it just makes sense that they're going to put those as close to London as possible. And good luck trying to find out where they're going to be. It's, as you said, all done behind closed doors. So whether you're an environmentalist, an anti-capitalist, an anti-speciesist, or just a general rabble-rouser, you know, it's good to get involved in something like this. London's about to be crowned the slaughter capital of Canada.
Yeah.
You're going to see more lives per day taken here than anywhere else.
Wow.
If nothing changes. So, you know, we just ask people to join it or share stuff or just follow along on Instagram and Facebook. We have a lot of fun. I've rewritten some popular song lyrics for Maple Leaf Foods, including Roxanne and Michelle by the Beatles and Sound of Silence. So it's fun to do these campaigns. It's important work, I think, but we can also have fun at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. That's wonderful. Is there somewhere that people can listen to the songs that you've done?
They're on the Facebook page for the most part. There's a little YouTube channel, my own YouTube channel as well. But Yeah, just, you know, look at the Facebook page.
Stop Maple Leaf Violence. That's
Stop Maple Leaf Violence.
Stop Maple Leaf Violence. Awesome.
We will.
Awesome. Yeah, so I guess I want to talk about a couple more things, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
I'm curious to know about your experiences. You went to the Animal Liberation Conference in Berkeley, California. I think that was in May. And then I believe you also attended the Animal Liberation Conference in Toronto in August. So do you mind telling us a little bit about those experiences and how that maybe informs some of the work that you do as an activist?
Sure. It's been another example of my kind of cis male white privilege to be able to cross borders and have a job that allows me to go to some of these conferences. But I've learned so much from being able to meet with activists from all over the world, build connections, and to be able to participate in mass actions like the one for the Toronto conference where four chickens were liberated from the Maple Leaf slaughterhouse lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
We had four amazing female activists put their bodies and their freedom on the line and lock themselves into a big concrete box so that basically the slaughterhouse couldn't operate. So it was my privilege to go to these events, and I really learned a lot from them. There's a lot of female leadership that set up both of these events. The DXC leadership now in Berkeley, California, is Almira Tanna, former Canadian, and Liberation TO that set up the Toronto event is also largely women-led, and it's just a real privilege to be able to go. So if anyone listening ever gets the chance to go to one of these conferences, it's really empowering.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I really hope that I can go to both of those next year. So that's something that I would love to do and support other activists here in the prairies to do as well. Because I do agree that it's so important that we learn from each other and learn skills and build, you know, stronger foundations of what we're doing and tactics and all those things. So
totally.
That's awesome. So one thing that maybe we could talk about, I know when you did your 5-day vigil, sometimes the vigils were not always highly attended. And I know this is something that we struggle with as well. It's always challenging to get people out at events. So maybe do you want to let us know, like, why is bearing witness so important? And, you know, why should people come out and do that?
Sure. So, I mean, I think people go plant-based for a lot of different reasons, environmental or health. But I think going for ethical reasons is the way that I've gone, and I think it's really hard to ever consider eating animals again. As I said before, if you've actually borne witness to animals going into slaughter, there's really nothing more powerful than staring into a chicken's or a pig's or a cow's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that individual, it's hard. Some mm-hmm. people, you know, find it too hard, and I would never encourage people to, you know, to do it or to continue to do it if it's going to be too hard on them. But I think it's important to do it at least once if you can. So yeah, that particular instance, I think you were talking about, I think I might have said something in the heading when I posted it about Potluck Vegans, Where Are You?
Yes, yeah.
And I took a little heat for that, and probably rightly so. I think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
For me, it was a really good check your privilege moment that, you know, often we kind of feel like our way is the best way, or this is the best kind of activism, or why aren't you doing what I'm doing? And I've always been a believer in calling in, not calling out. And it's worth saying, I mean, I'm not a very good cook, so I'm probably not the guy you want to invite to, to too many potlucks. But there is important activism going on in all shades. And I mm-hmm. totally, you know, think that, you know, my own journey involved experiencing plant-based cooking. So I think it's a good example of when, you know, calling in, we do spend time at potlucks trying to get vegans to come out and be activists, and that's an important way. And I think it's just important to recognize that the enemy is animal agriculture and big business, and that none of us have a monopoly on the right kind of activism.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up, because I think it is such an important thing to talk about, especially as activists, because obviously sometimes we get frustrated when we have low numbers because we can't do as many things, or we think we can't.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that you said that, because it is so important to recognize that there's so many ways that we can do activism for animals or that we can build a community. And that's one way that potlucks or things like social gatherings among vegans, it's a really good way to build community. And maybe, you know, if we build that community, then people are going to want to do other things. And also, I've really realized that activism is, certain types of activism are not always accessible to everyone for whatever reason it is. And people don't need to even give a reason. But if you, you know, if people out there want to do activism, but maybe are afraid or don't know, like, what kind of advice would you have for those folks who do want to get involved, but just maybe are hesitant or just shy, nervous, anxious, that kind of stuff?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, we do see a lot of infighting online, and we see, you often hear that, you know, activists can make veganism look bad or that it's counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would define activism as holding a sign or being at a protest. And that's evolving. I think there's just so many more options, you know. There's online phone-in email campaigns. We mm-hmm. need fundraisers. We need graphic designers. There's social media, transportation, hosting, snacks, research. The list goes on and on. So I think it's, if you're feeling hesitant, you know, it's easy to follow along things on social media and kind of dip your toes in the water a little bit, and just consider that there's a million different kinds of activism. And hopefully we can be kinder to each other as activists. And, you know, if our numbers are low, then maybe we're doing something wrong. Maybe we need to try a different approach. But it's not because, you know, like you said, people don't have to give a reason for not doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be brave, you know, if you can.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think that's a really important thing that we need to talk about as activists that can sometimes seem, you know, exclusive or difficult to join. And then, yeah, there is often infighting online, even yeah. among vegans and activists, about which tactics are most important or most helpful, or that people don't agree with certain things. Recently, there was kind of a thing here online about certain tactics that people didn't agree with. And then it, you know, caused a lot of just unnecessary, I don't know what the word is, energy. Maybe talking about something when it's like, we don't always necessarily agree with everything everyone is doing or every group is doing, but we can still support them as long as they're not being discriminatory or oppressive. That's kind of my philosophy.
Yeah,
is that you don't bash
really
other activists or other activism. Don't participate if you don't want to, but don't bash it. Leave those comments, keep those comments to yourself.
Yep. No. None of us have the answer as to what exactly it's going to take to change this thing around. So it's really good to kind of talk behind the scenes, like DXE puts it, calling in,
mm-hmm.
you know, contacting somebody personally and saying, hey, let's talk about this privately rather than kind of washing our dirty laundry online.
Yeah,
exactly. Where it can discourage others from even getting involved at all.
Yeah. I mean, I know I can't speak for you, but I know I've participated in it before, and it's something I really do not want to engage in. You know, any of those types of discussions online. But yeah, it's more of a one-on-one thing. I think that's really good. And just focusing on, yeah, calling people in and just having discussions and learning to understand, not to be right.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, there's something that I've been learning about called nonviolent communication, or NVC,
mm-hmm.
which is a way of like expressing feelings and needs and empathizing with the other person's position. And it's a powerful way to get to understand that when anybody's angry, there's a reason for that, that they've got needs or feelings that are unmet. And if you can understand that and step into their shoes, I think we could advance things a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm. So that really sounds like, yeah, just a lot more empathetic or compassionate communication for each other instead of, you know, assuming or judging, just really trying to understand. Because we are all, each of us, right, we go through the world, we fight our own battles, no one knows what we're going through each day except us. So if we can just remember that we're all very similar, you know, can maybe make it a lot easier to just have compassion for people.
Yep, 100%, 100 million percent.
Yeah, sure. No, thank you for chatting about this, because it's probably one of the most challenging things, I'd say, about, you know, building community of activism, because everyone is so different, everyone's so passionate, everyone has different ways of approaching things. So it's so important that we, yeah, treat each other with kindness and try to find a way to work together positively, even if we don't always agree on things, or even if there is sometimes conflict.
Totally, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe let's talk a little bit just about, you know, animal rights activism, animal liberation activism in Canada. So how do you see this movement like growing and taking shape?
Well, I think we've seen some amazing new leaders coming along and new initiatives developing. The conference in Toronto that we talked about involved a lot of escalation of tactics and workshops and a focus on something called momentum-based organizing. We're seeing other movements embrace this kind of organizing, such as Extinction Rebellion, kind of creating what they call moments of the whirlwind or moments when the public's imagination is captured, and how you create those, how you work with them is a very powerful force, if you can harness it. We're seeing a lot more intersectionality in the movement, I think, and a lot more discussion about that. Mm-hmm. It really, I mean, I can't say it enough times that I'm a middle-aged, cis, male, white guy, and I had to have my eyes open to the fact that just because I feel safe going out with a sign and protesting or feel safe talking to police, this is not an experience that a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. That, you know, my literal arrival in Canada is dependent on me being who I am, that people can't cross borders the same way that I do. So intersectionality has been a powerful force in the movement, and I think we're seeing things come together. Things like these conferences are really going to help grow things, and continual learning, online workshops and training are really helping.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, it's been pretty amazing to see even just the amount of escalation of tactics in Canada just over the summer that we hadn't seen. So like several like meet the victims types events.
Sure, yeah.
So that's pretty amazing to see because animals are getting out and activists are exposing the truth. So to me, that really gives me hope that things are changing.
Yeah, me too. And I think the pressure campaigns are fun too. Like,
yeah.
We only had to go to Michael's house 3 times before we were contacted by May Police and said, hey, Michael doesn't like you going to his house. Can we sit down and talk about that?
Exactly. So it works.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I mean, in a way.
Haven't canceled the slaughterhouse.
No.
It's progress. So.
But exactly.
And the same thing happened at the Toronto conference. We were able to find the owner's mansion for Fearman's, Safina Foods. He's got it like, it's actually 11, he's worth $11 billion and has this incredible mansion up in the fanciest part of Toronto. And we were able to put, you know, 300 activists on the front lawn with signs representing the ghosts of the industry and taking that to the richest part of Toronto in a love-based way. We stayed on public property. These kinds of escalations, I think, are going to be important going forward.
Definitely. Like, I know for us here in Winnipeg, watching that action that you guys did, like, so essentially like a funeral or a memorial, was so powerful. And I spoke to other activists who were there in person. They said it was, yeah, very powerful event to be a part of. And I think, like you said, just bringing that into that area in Toronto and having everyone see this and see it online is just really powerful and important. And it's also just changing the way that people think about animals. You know, they're not just, you know, property. They're individuals who have, you know, desires and the same desire for freedom that we do. So I think that's really important in terms of challenging speciesism.
I agree 100%.
Maybe now let's talk about what do you find maybe the most challenging part of doing animal rights activism?
Good question. So I think for me, there's this constant feeling, are you doing enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the animals keep dying and the media and big business and most folks still don't seem to know what speciesism means. So that's a challenge. You know, we're not the non-humans ourselves. We're trying to speak for them or raise their issues, but mm-hmm. it's a little different than some other social justice movements. But that thing that's challenging, the fact that the industry keeps killing animals, it means there's just an incredible opportunity to educate people. Like, I literally had no idea about any of this stuff 3 years ago. So there's just millions and millions of Canadians and people out there that have no idea. And all we've got to do is find new and creative ways to you know, inform people. And I think things can change. And our tactics are evolving. as well. So, yeah, that's what's challenging for me.
That's, thank you for sharing. Yeah, no, I like that you turned that into an opportunity for action. So that was pretty hopeful. I like that. But yeah, maybe do you want to actually just talk about speciesism for a minute? Because anyone who's listening that might not fully understand, I think we've said it a few times. Maybe let's just, yeah, talk about what that means.
Sure. So speciesism is the discrimination against species, essentially. That, you know, there are some species that we respect and other species that we don't. Even amongst the non-humans, we seem to love dogs and cats, and people will get very excited and upset when they hear about, you know, dog-eating festivals in Asia. And yet, at the same time, we'll happily eat a, well, not us, but in general, we'll eat a beef burger or a chicken burger. And this idea that why are some species discriminated against, just as sexes were discriminated against in the past, or certain races, is, I think, is a powerful new way to look at things for people. It certainly was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for explaining that, because I think it's, yeah, critical to our movement that people understand what these concepts are and things that we're talking about.
Yeah, and there's some great resources out there on speciesism, such as, you know, challengespeciesism.com has some great videos that talk about language and just different ways to challenge speciesism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough word to say, to really get, you know, into the public language, but
it is.
Once you get your tongue around it, it's fine.
And there's ways that we can get around, you know, maybe not even saying always the word speciesism, because I know when we're interviewed, you know, say by the mainstream media for certain news articles, I'll always try and talk about that, but maybe in like a, I do say that word, they don't print it often, but we'll talk about how, you know, animals are individuals. They're not property.
Right.
We call them, you know, people eating animals, or, you know, the actual names. We don't try to hide behind things like, you know, meat or even killing. Like, I often will just say murder. And I know
right.
for a lot of people that can sometimes be off-putting, but I think language is also very important to this movement and how we're going to unnormalize animal abuse in society. So it might be shocking in a way, but I think it's important that we say things like murder, you know, torture, rape, because that's what happens to animals.
Some of those concepts can be challenging for sure. And there's, you know, different opinions about when what to use it. I feel like as a man, me talking about rape is probably something that I wouldn't do. We all have our comfort levels, and it really
does
depend who you're talking to sometimes. You
oh,
know,
totally.
Whether it's an opportunity, but any opportunity to raise the issues are good ones. And there are some really good language guides out there. Just talking about something as simple as, you know, eating fishes or eating chickens, and not, you know, eating chicken, like that you're eating chickens.
Just adding the plural,
can be powerful and subtle, and not, you know, not confrontational at all.
Exactly.
Like you said earlier, we never know what somebody else has been through. So,
exactly. No, and I wouldn't just say that to people.
I know,
but
I do think
it's important if, say, we're writing articles talking about dairy industry or something like that, that we use certain terms.
Sure.
Even just reminding people that animals aren't its, because I know I'll still hear people refer to animals as an it. Like what is its name? It's like, no, what is their name? What is her name? His name? So I think that's another pretty simple way that we can just let people know that, you know,
sure.
or call animals by their names. If we have, you know, if they have names, if there are companions or animals that we know at sanctuaries, or I know a lot of activist groups, after they rescue animals, they name them, or even animals they've rescued that have died, they still name, which I think is really powerful.
Definitely. They are individuals. You only have to spend, you know, 5 minutes talking to a sanctuary owner that hangs out with these non-humans every day to see that they have personalities and, you know, they choose their friends and peer circles, and they get grumpy and sad and everything else. They're just little individuals.
Yeah, just, you know, very similar to us. Just they look different.
Mm.
We only have a few minutes left before we play a song that you picked. So maybe, I don't know if there's anything else that you want to share with people. Anything, you know, messages of hope that you want to share, or just how can people get in touch with your campaign?
Sure. Yeah, I definitely would love people to follow along on the campaign, or, you know, volunteer if they're if they're interested. Mostly, I mean, I'm just learning so much myself. I don't see myself as a leader. I'm just learning and finding my way. So just like me, I just ask people to keep learning and educating ourselves about activism and capitalism and speciesism and intersectionality. Mexie, M-E-X-I-E, on YouTube has really powerful videos exploring themes of capitalism, privilege, and veganism. Adrienne Marie Brown's one of my favorite authors. She has fantastic books on connection and activism, pleasure activism, she calls it. And just keep on learning, and please don't get too discouraged. You know, yeah, this is a business where we're fighting against murder and torture, but you know, we are a community, and whenever you can get together online or in person with people, it's a wonderful experience. Practice self-care and stay hopeful and optimistic.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. That's, yeah, really powerful. And I think that's important. What you said is don't give up, because this is like a long battle we're fighting. But that's why, like you said, building that community of support and seeing people in person and having those connections, that's what keeps activists motivated and keeps them going, is just knowing that we have the support of each other, and ultimately knowing who we're fighting for, you know, is the animals. They can all live in sanctuaries and freedom.
Totally.
Well, Rob, thank you so, so much for being here today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about animal rights and, you know, all the work that you're doing and the insights that you have to share with us. Rob picked a song for us. So, Rob, do you want to explain the song that you picked and kind of why you chose it?
Sure. So I picked Criminal Mind by Gowan. I think it's a powerful Canadian song that describes a criminal mind that has no remorse or guilt. And I'm asking people to question that narrative, you know, as we see an escalation of tactics to fight for victims of animal agriculture. What is right and wrong? We're seeing activists put their freedom on the line repeatedly. When should we break laws that are inherently unjust? I'm not, you know, advocating anybody to break the law, but how far will you go to nonviolently challenge the system or support others that do? In the song, Gowan talks about having been behind these steel bars for so long. For me, that steel cage was when I believed that capitalism was the only way, that animals were there for our use, and that we should all be just good citizens. And that's the cage I'm hoping more people can break out of. And thanks again for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rob. And I think that's a perfect song choice. So that's how we're going to end the show. So thank you again, Rob. It was great to chat with you. We'll have to have you back on again, because there's always so much to talk about in terms of animal rights and the movement. But I appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you for picking the song. And for our listeners, thank you everyone for listening to Vegan Activist Radio. We'll be back next week. It'll actually be a pre-recorded show, though, because as Rob and I talked about, activists with Manitoba Animal Save, including myself, will be going to Maple Leaf Foods in Brandon, Manitoba, to hold a vigil for baby pigs. Yep. We wish you would be, we could join us, Rob, but maybe one day we'll come out there, or, you know, you can come here. Anyways, but yeah, thank you everyone for listening to Vegan Activist Radio. Thanks again, Rob. It's 101.5 UMFM. Here is Gowan. Stone.
if I'm really so bad.